Into Action Workshop. I'd like to begin this meeting with an extended moment of silence to do with as you choose. Usually I pray for those who are still out there suffering, followed by a serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Okay, out of respect for those attending, would you please silence all cell phones and pagers? Who still has a pager? Seriously. Yeah. The 12 traditions are to the group what the 12 steps are to the individual. I've asked Dan to read them. Dan from Milwaukee, well, actually from West Dallas, to read them for us.
From Damn an Addict. And these are the 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon seeing unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in a group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirements for CA membership is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. Four, each group should be autonomous in accepting matters affecting other groups or CA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the addict who still suffers. Six, the CA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the CA name to any related facility or outside enterprises. Less problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every CA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, cocaine anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, CA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, cocaine anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the CA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need to always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, television, and films. And 12. Anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding this place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Dan. All right. Before we start, I have to make this clear. This is not a meeting of Cocaine Anonymous. And that's important. What I'm about to say to you is pretty much the way that I interpret this program, okay? Many of you might right off the bat say, hey, wait a second, that doesn't sound right. And that's okay that you do that. It's okay that you do that. This is my combined knowledge. It's from what people have taught me, what I've learned by reading through this book many times, with many other people, by the way. It's what I've learned from having sponsees and me go through this book and them stopping me and telling me I'm wrong, like Dan here when he tells me there's two prayers in the 11th step, not one. And that's pretty much how I learn. And by the way, if anybody's interested, all of these other books that are up here are the history books in which I take a lot of what I know out of. They're really important to have as far as I'm concerned because, you know, I mean, the big book, I love the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I work out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anytime I work with anybody, I come directly out of this book, okay? But it's nice to know the history behind it because it kind of helps put the puzzle pieces together. It took me, in my recovery up to this point, about 22 years for them to finally all fit together. And I said, wow, that makes sense now. All this other time, it never made much sense. And that's because I had a lot of teachers that told me, it doesn't freaking matter what this is. You know, you just gotta do it. You just gotta do it. And for me, that never cut it. So I had to kind of make sense of it, and they worked on that for a long time. And the people that I worked with helped me to do that. Because the more I work with others, the more information I get. I have a step study going on at my house where we're going through the big book and we're reading these steps. And I'm reading part of the step going, oh, I never seen that before. And I can't tell you how many times I've read this book. And I'm still going, oh, I never seen that before. Just last week, we opened up part of it. And lately, I've been saying this thing about the first step, that if you're working the first step to the best of your ability, you're using. And I'll get to that a little later. But because that's what people have always told me. You have to work the first step to the best of your ability. But you have to admit 100% when you walk into rooms that you are powerless and your life is unmanageable. When you walk into rooms. Anyway, we'll get to that. So this is pretty much the way I understand it. And hopefully you get something out of it. And if not, maybe I'll plant a little seed, you know. So, like I said, I don't speak for CA. I speak for myself and my experiences. And I have notes, and I'm going to occasionally look at them. I'm going to start with a little bit of history of AA, okay? And I'm going to tell you that Bill decided they were going to write this book, and he went to Reader's Digest, and he told them we were going to write this book, and Reader's Digest said, okay, when are you going to have this book done? And he told them, and Bill starts writing, and he starts writing, and he's writing forever, right? And there was like two different parts of AA at the time. They weren't really AA yet, but they were two different parts of this program. One was from Akron, which was a more religiously based, God-based thing. And the other one was from New York, which was a lot more free. And Bill was doing all this writing, and he's writing forever, and it's coming up to like 2 months before he has to have this book written, right? And the Akron contingency, the more religious contingency, comes up and says, hey, when are you going to start writing about the spiritual program of action, right? And Bill said, I better start doing that. And he started writing chapter 5, okay? This is important to understand that the spiritual program of action starts on chapter 5, which is the third step. And I say that for a real specific reason, and we'll get to that. The other part of history that I want to talk about right now is that Bill went in to see Dr. Silkworth, and Dr. Silkworth gave him this medical opinion. And he said, it's the obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. And Bill thought, wow, I can stay sober. I can stay sober with that. And he went out, and eventually he used again. And then he was, you know, and he was completely depressed. And his buddy came over, Ebby, and sat down with him and gave him the spiritual program of action as of the Oxford groups, right? And Bill was really impressed by this, that Ebby could sober up. And he went back into the hospital one more time to have this treatment done, right? Or to see Silkworth to have treatment done to sober up or to get dry again. And he asked Ebby back and asked Ebby to get them spiritual principles again. And Ebby gave them to him. And Bill stayed sober after that. And Bill went out from there. And he went out for several months trying to help people sober up with the spiritual program of action from the Oxford groups. And he couldn't help anybody. And he was really depressed. And he couldn't figure out, why can't I help anybody? They helped me sober up, right? And he went back and he seen Dr. Silkworth. And Dr. Silkworth told him, maybe you need to try to give them the medical opinion first. And then maybe some of your story. Let them know who you are and that you're the same as them, and then give them the spiritual program of action. And Bill said, I'll try that. He did with Dr. Bob, and that's how AA started. And that's the basis of CA, as most all of you know, hopefully all of you know. But it's important to know that. The first step is the medical opinion. Okay? The first step is the medical opinion. It's not the spiritual program of action. We practice the first step when we're out there using. We become powerless. Our life becomes unmanageable, right? The steps are all written in past tense, by the way, which is really important to know if you think about it. We were powerless, that our lives were unmanageable. Think about that. It doesn't say we are. We don't have to stay sick to stay here, and I think that's really important to know. It's really important to know. Because once we get the rest of the program, we get the power of God in our life, we get the power of these steps in our life, and we stay sober. We're no longer sick. Does that make sense? Okay, that's good. Because one of the things that I've learned about the program, and I think is unfortunate maybe in the way that we're brought up in this program, in the way that we teach this program, is we kind of teach victimization almost. We tell people that you have to work that step to the best of your ability, you know? Be powerless and unmanageable to your best of your ability. I heard somebody say it last night at the meeting, you know? I'm still powerless. My life's still unmanageable. I'm no longer powerless. My life is no longer unmanageable. It can be unmanageable at times, you know? And if I let the obsession get to me, my life can get unmanageable. But I have all these tools, you know? At 12 years sober, I'm sitting in discussing Christmas with my family, which is huge, right? And my older sister, who I've been fighting with all my life, decides that she's going to pick one of her fights with me, right? And of course, it was her fault, right? And anyway, we start the argument, and she gets up and she leaves. And I get home, and my wife at the time looks at me and says, "Boy, Jeff, you have a lot more tools than that." You know, and I'm thinking, "Yeah, you're absolutely right." You know, and I had to go through the steps with this, and then we had to sit down and we had to talk. And since then, me and my sister have a great relationship. You know, but my life became unmanageable. You know, and anyhow, where was I? First step. So, steps are written in past tense. And another thing that I like to point out is, and when you're reading the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that the word "we" in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous is not us. Okay? It might be in our new reading that we wrote, and to replace how it works, but in how it works, that is not us. It says, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path." If you think about this, in our program, that's not true, right? But in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, when they wrote this book, that was true. If you look at the forward to the second edition, they talk about that at the very end of the forward to the second edition. They say, "Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder who stayed with AA showed improvement," which is a kind of a laugh. But they're talking about a 75% success rate. We don't have a 75% success rate. We can't say, "Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path," because our path has got pretty mixed up. And that's unfortunate. Unfortunately, we're bringing in a lot of things. This is my opinion. Remember, this is my opinion. We are bringing in a lot of things from the outside of this program, and we're bringing it into this program. And we're kind of fuzzing up the lines, I think. And so when I stick basically to this program and I teach this program, that's what I do, is I teach this program. In the second step, they talk about the idea of returning to sanity. And I think a lot of people get that idea wrong too. You know, they think about the crazy stuff they did, and that's their insanity. When really what they're talking about in sanity, I believe, in the second step, is the obsession of the mind. And the reason why I say that is this. I am absolutely incapable of ever once I have it, stopping the allergy of the body. I will always have it. There's no way it'll ever go away. That's what makes me different than everybody else. I have this allergy of the body. It can't possibly go away. And there's nothing I can do about that, right? So I have to, in order to attack this disease, I have to attack the obsession of the mind, okay? And it talks about that in the book, too. I think it's on page 23 or something like that. And it talks about it in the doctor's opinion. We can't do anything about the allergy body. We have to stop this with it in the obsession of the mind, right? But if we got to remember this also. So, okay. The other thing that we have to remember is when we're doing this, we have to remember this is about our disease of alcoholism and addiction, right? And the things and the obsession of the mind. That's what it's about. And so the sanity that they talk about in the second step is really the obsession of the mind. Does that make sense? And a lot of people never put that together for me. They never taught me that. You know, I always thought it was the crazy stuff that I was doing out there. You know, but that's not what it is. It's about the obsession of the mind. And that's what I have to work on, is that obsession of the mind. So the second step, remembering that the spiritual program of action starts on chapter 5, which is the third step, right? And the medical opinion is number 1, right? That makes the second step a statement. And to me, that makes the second step a statement. What they're saying is if you continue to work the rest of these steps, the obsession will go away. That's what it says to me, okay? To other people, it says a whole bunch of other things, but that's what it says to me. And so for me, the first and second step are pretty simple. I can admit powerlessness and unmanageability by saying this. Yes, I believe that I have a mind that will obsess over things, especially alcohol or drugs, once I get to that point, and it can't stop. Yes, I have that. Yes, if I take the first one, I will continue to use until I go broke, I end up into a jail, into a hospital. Yes, I have that. If I can admit those things, that's it. That's all you have to do. That's all that's to it. It seems like so much more, but this is such a simple program. We have to keep this at the simplistic level, okay? And the same with sanity. Sanity is not about all the crazy things that we did. It's just about the obsession of the mind. That's it. God will restore us to sanity if we continue to do these things that come after this, okay? For me. And I have to keep saying that. For me. All right. Which pretty much brings me to the next step, where everything starts, everything begins. Now I know I have obsession of the mind, I have allergy of the body, right? I've 100% admitted that I'm powerless over it and that my life is unmanageable. At that point when I came in, I 100% admitted that, right? I had no other way out. And that's what they want you to do when you walk in the doors. So what do I do? You know, what do I do? And the third step, they're talking about this idea of turning our will and our life over to the care of God. When I sat down with my sponsees one day and somebody asked me, what does will mean? And I started spouting something out of my mouth, you know, like I knew. And I said, we better look up that word. And between us, we opened up the 1928 dictionary and we started reading through all the definitions of the word will. And we came on, all of us being 6 at that time, agreed to that definition of power of choosing, which makes a lot of sense. The word will, power of choosing. And so I have, and then we looked up the word life, which means from this day till the time we die. And it makes it a lot easier. When I came in, the word will to me meant everything that I did, every part of my life, you know. This is what I'm going to be from now on. Everything, every move that I make, and that was way too hard for me to accept, you know. But if I look at the idea of power of choosing, and I say to myself, can I let God help me with my choices? I can do that. I can do that. And can I let this power greater than me, whatever it is? And by the way, when I came in, the idea of God, I didn't want anything to do with the idea of God. I really didn't, you know. And I had a sponsor who absolutely, he was going to, and I ought to tell you how I picked my sponsor. I was at a meeting, and we were at one of these long tables in a cafeteria. He was sitting on the other side. I was at one end, he was on the other end, and I spewed something, and it went around the table to him, and he looked directly at me, and he said, "You're full of shit." And I thought, and at the time, I don't think I was a very nice person, but I certainly believed that I wasn't a nice person, and I was certainly one of them people who sat back and said, "Don't screw with me." And this guy did, man. He said something to me, and I thought, I need to have him as my sponsor. And I picked him, and that was my sponsor. And where was I? Somebody give me an idea of where I was before I went off on that tangent.
Oh, step three, life.
Oh, yeah. Will and life. Well. Okay. Choices and life. So the thing about him now was that he constantly pushed God on me. He used to tell me all the time that I had to believe in this thing. And he wouldn't let me move forward in the steps. And eventually, what happened was, I was in the middle of insanity again, and I was thinking about using, and I was going crazy. And I was making my phone calls, and at that time, the way that I got past my insanity was I made phone calls till somebody answered the phone, and I puked all over them, and I felt better, and then I'd hang up the phone. And they'd probably feel worse, but I always felt better. And I used to do that a lot, because I didn't want to believe in God, you know. My sponsor would always argue with me, and one day, finally, I made all my phone calls, and nobody answered the phone, and it wasn't like they were looking at caller ID going, "Oh, it's Jeff, you know, I'm not going to answer the phone," because we didn't have caller ID. There just was no human presence there for me to rely on anymore, so I had to call my sponsor. And he listened to me for about 2 minutes, and then he said, "Go talk to God," and hung up the phone. I don't even think it was 2 minutes. It was probably like a minute. And like I said, I was in the middle of my obsession, so I didn't know what to do. I was freaking out, and I got angry. Actually, I got really angry, and I said, "Screw it, I'm going to do this. I'm going to walk out this door, and I'm going to do exactly what he told me to do," and I pounded open my back door. I looked up. I said, "If there's something out there, help," and I walked back in the house, and within a few minutes, the obsession started to subside. And I thought, wow, that's a coincidence. And then I did it again. And the same thing happened, and I did it again, and the same thing happened. And eventually, a faith grew. And through the faith, by the way, in the third step, they tell you also that this is the one place that they tell you to pause. They tell you to pause, and that you can't move forward until you get some kind of concept greater than you that can help you with your choices. That's what they tell you in the book, okay? And that's really important. I think it's really important to know that. And I don't care how you warp that concept of God or that concept of a power greater than you, you just have to have something. You have to have something. And I don't believe that you really should move forward without that, and neither does the book. And they're pretty specific about that. So anyway, the other thing that they tell us in the third step, which is really important, is what our real problem is. and it has got nothing to do with drinking and using. Okay? And they say in there that selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problems. The root, think about that. They don't say that alcohol or drugs are the root of our problem. They tell us that selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of our problems. And then they say that it's driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-pity, and self-seeking. Those are the things we obsess over. Think about that for a while. After time, that idea of alcohol kind of subsides, right? But we're still sick. I mean, I'm still sick. I was really still sick. And I got to say that because, okay, here comes my notes. You ready? In step four, they tell you, after you go through all the parts of step four, they tell you to look for your own parts in this. They tell you selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. Sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Then in step 10, they tell you to look for selfish, dishonest, resentment, and fear. Still sounds kind of interesting, doesn't it? Then in step 11, they talk about resentful, dishonest, selfish, or afraid when you retire at night. And then in the morning, they tell you resentful to ask to have divorce from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Now, if they're saying those words over and over again, there must be a reason why, don't you think? It's because those are the things that you obsess over. If we take care of the obsession over fear, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking, we can possibly stay sober, right? If we stop the obsession over fear, self-delusion, self-pity, self-seeking. So maybe that's what they're asking you to look for in the fourth step. As a matter of fact, that's what they told you to look for in the fourth step, wasn't it? And they give you these tools in the fourth step that are really cool, right? And they tell you in the fourth step, okay, now I need to look in my book here just so I don't get any of this wrong. I'm looking for fear, self-delusion, self-pity, and self-seeking, right? And I'm looking for that to take care of the obsession because I can't do anything about the allergy of the mind. So they tell you to, they start off with the anger, right? And they tell you to write out everybody you're angry at, right? Resentment. By the way, the word resentment means, if you go back to the basic Latin words of it, it means to re-feel. And this was something that one of my sponsors taught me that was really important, and that was that I need to write those things that I re-feel down also, because sometimes they don't fall under people, institutions, or principles, you know. But I still re-feel them over and over and over again, you know. And so I need to have those on my fourth step as well. So I write down, who am I angry at? I write down, why am I angry? I write down, what does it affect my personal life, my personal or sex relations, my ambitions, my security, my self-esteem, right? And then after that, a part that a lot of people miss, and I wish Lewis didn't leave because he really covered this well yesterday when he was speaking on the fourth step. But and here it is right out of the book. It's a plain, on page 66, it's plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile? That's a part of the fourth step that most people don't look at. And when I have people do the fourth step, I have people write that out. How much time do I waste in this resentment? What should I be doing instead? And it's important that they do this because I've found, and the reason why I even do this is because as I'm talking to people after they did their fifth step, I realized that this is one of the chords that hits. Wow, how much, I mean, once I got mad at my brother while I was out there using, I didn't talk to my brother for 3 years, you know, because I should have been kicked out of the bar, and he's the one that did it, you know. And I was going to start a fight with him, but the cops pulled up, so I couldn't, you know. But I was mad at him for that, because I was causing this commotion in the bar that I shouldn't have been. And he threw me out. What the hell is that? So he's my brother. So 3 years. How much time do I waste in this? What should I be doing instead? And that's the implications that it gives in that paragraph to me. What should I be doing instead? And that is also, well, I'll come back to that. So anyway, when they're writing their four step, they write this part out. And I think it's important that they write this part out. Not only that, but then down at the bottom of the page, they talk about this idea. We realized the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too, right? So I have them write about that idea for by now. Oh, wait, I'm going to step backwards. I'm sorry. For by now, we ought to realize that we're spiritually sick, right? And they talk about that before the fourth step. They talk about this idea that when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. Anybody ever read that in the book? You know what they're talking about? They're talking about this idea that the obsession of the mind will go away, and at which time we'll be sane enough never to take the first one, right? And the allergy of the body won't kick in. Makes sense? Makes sense to me. I guess that's all. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. So if we realize that we're spiritually sick, perhaps we can realize that this other person who wronged us is spiritually sick as well. Not only that, but then we start to compare their sickness to our own. And I don't know about you guys, but I was pretty sick. I still am. But I was really sick when I was out there, and there's not a lot of people that can wrong me that have wronged me more than I've wronged others, okay? And once I do that, it's hard to throw stones when you live in a glass house, and that's really what it comes down to. And they go on to say, we ask people to show the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. Once you realize that, right? And then they, when offended, we say to ourselves, this is a sick man, how can I be helpful to him, right? Now, this idea of writing out the idea of how can I be helpful to somebody, right? And now you've also wrote about how much time am I wasting in this, and what should I be doing instead, and how can I be helpful. It sure sounds like the A step to me, doesn't it? Sounds like you're writing the A step while you're doing the four step, doesn't it? The cool part about this, and they go on to say, God save me from being angry, thy will be done, right? The cool part about this is you haven't even looked at your part yet. So you've already got to this point where you almost have this forgiveness for this person. You've written your A step on them. You know what you're going to do to make amends for them. Now they ask you to look at, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Think about that. Just think about that for a minute. How easy is that? How easy is that? Once we've gotten to the point where we've forgiven and we're ready to be helpful to somebody, how easy is it for us to look at our own part? And then, even better, how easy is it for us to say, God, take that away? Right? Kind of cool, isn't it? See, this is the way that I believe the book tells us to work this. I love the big book, but I put a big ass X through that. Because they just give you such a little part of this, you know, because they tell you that you should do these columns, but then they don't tell you about this idea of how much time do I waste in it. What should I be doing instead? Spiritual sickness of others, spiritual sickness, self, God save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? Right? They don't tell you that. They don't tell you to do that in here. this is like a shortcut. Let's take a little shortcut and get through this. But then you really don't have the tools. And that's the other part about this that I believe, okay? And I believe it's really important. We go back and we look at all of our past, right? And we got all these names from our past. And we work this four-step on them, right? But why do we work this four-step on them? Not so that we sit in this victimization shit, which many of us end up doing, right? Oh my God, I did all this terribly bad stuff. Okay, it is in part to be able to recognize what it was in the past. But I believe that more importantly, what we should be doing while we're doing this four-step is practicing these things that'll help us get to the future. Who am I angry at? Why am I angry at? What does it affect? How much time am I going to waste in it? Spiritual sickness of others, spiritual sickness of self. God save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? God take away the fears. God help me, help remove these things from me. What should I do to correct this? Does that all sound familiar to you? I mean, that's how you should think. And if you do, say you have 50 people and you do this over and over again, who am I angry at? Why am I angry at? What does it affect? How much time am I going to waste in it? What should I be doing instead? Spiritual sickness of others, spiritual sickness of self. God save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? God take away the fears. You know, what do I need to do to correct this? Boom, boom, boom. You do this over and over again 50 times. What's going to happen? This is going to become a working part of your mind. That's what the 10th step is. Right? A working part of your mind. That's what they ask you to do. They say continue to take a personal inventory. What are they asking you to do? They're asking you to work this over and over again in your mind so that it becomes a common working theme in your head. Who am I angry at? Why am I angry? What does it affect? How much time am I going to waste in it? What should I be doing instead? Spiritual sickness of others, spiritual sickness of self. God save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? Take away your fears. Pretty damn cool. See, one of the other things that I think about this is we're taught, and rightfully so, how to do these steps one at a time. Okay? But what we should really be taught is how to do these steps all together. Because this is a huge concept. A huge concept that Bill broke up into all these little parts. But really, we should be thinking automatically in our head as one, this is just one big thing. 10 steps, who are we angry at? What? 11th step, you know what they tell you to do in the 11th step? 11th step, I don't know if you guys ever read the 11th step in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but basically they tell you to do the same thing that you did in the 10th step at night before you go to bed. Now in the 12 and 12, they tell you to do this in the morning, or in the 10th step. They tell you to do it in 10 steps. But in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they tell you that before you go to bed at night, you should think about all these things, and including where was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, right? They have a whole list of things. When we are tired at night, we constructively review our day. Where were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should have been discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all, right? And if you can answer all those questions, yes, wow, I had a great day, right? Then they go on to say, what could I have done better? You know, they're talking about increasing your spirituality and your connection with God, right? So they go on to say, what could I have done better? How could I have done this better? I did all these things good, but how could I have still done it better? Kind of cool, eh? And then they go on, yeah, what could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into our stream of life, right? Pretty cool, right? The next day, they're telling you, before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking to be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives, right? And they go on to say why, so that you can think clearer, make better choices. Isn't that what we talked about in the third step? Kind of cool, right? So what's into action? Into action is this idea of getting this into your head. Who am I angry at? Why am I angry at? What does it affect? How much time am I going to waste in this? What should I be doing instead? Spiritual sickness of others, spiritual sickness self. God save me from being angry. How can I be helpful? God take away all the fears. Later on in the steps, they tell us if any of these things affect us, we should ask God to remove them. That's it. Pretty simple, hey? Ask God to remove them. Wow, this obsession starting in my brain, right? What should I do? Ask God to remove it. Woo! So freaking hard, right? I mean, really, they talk about this being a simple program, and that's really, this is as simple as it gets, and it really, this is the honesty of what this is. This is what the program should be. We should allow it to be this simple in our life and hopefully stay sober because of it. And that's what they're telling you to do in the 12th step, is to work this, working mind, have this working mind, right? And then they're saying to pass this on to others and allow them to have the working mind too. This is a program of hope. It's not a program of despair. This is a program of healthiness. It's not a program of sickness. And that's what we got to get right. Because if we don't get this right, we're going to, people just keep going out there using, you know? This is a program of hope. All of these steps are program of a hope. They're all programs of hope. Even the first step, we were powerless, that our lives were unmanageable. They're no longer. I'm no longer powerless over drugs and alcohol. I'm no longer powerless over my obsessive mind. I know how to stop it. I work this program. When it gets really bad, and I can tell you stories of that, certainly. When it gets really bad, I'm sitting in my house with my ex-wife, and she was my wife at the time, and I'm there with her and Brian, and we're having a wonderful morning, right? And I hear that somebody's coming over to my house who I don't want over at my house, and I begin to, my obsessive mind starts. And I go sit on my front porch, and I start praying, God, take this away, God, take this away, God, take this away, right? But it's not going away. I don't know what to do. I get up, and I walk to my backyard, and I sit in my backyard. Fortunately, it was a nice day outside. And I start going, God, take this away, God, take this, and it's not going away. And I mean, I'm doing this for like 15 minutes on the front porch, 15 minutes in the backyard, back to the front porch, back to the backyard, and it's still there. And now I've already wasted an hour, right? So I go down in the basement, and I sit down, and I start writing out this four step. And I write out the person's name, why I'm angry, right? All the rest of this. I get to this point, how much time am I going to waste in this? And I think about this idea, and what should I be doing instead? And I think about this idea of how my wife's upstairs with Brian, and we are having a wonderful morning. And I just spent the last hour and a half being completely freaking crazy and not enjoying that wonderful morning. And that person's not even at my house yet. You know? And what happens? Wow! Oh, wake up! You know? And so we put these tools to work in whatever fashion possible in order to make them work correctly. And that, to me, is into action. Anybody have any questions?
When you looked up the word will,
yes.
What did it say?
It said power of choosing.
Power of choosing.
Yes. Anyone else? Come on. I guess I was clear.
Yeah.
All right. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer.